You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Diamondbacks baseball.
And he corks one way back, and it is gone!
The D-backs BP show.
Fly ball to left, hit pretty well by Lamb at the wall, it's gone!
Diamondbacks radio network.
There's a shot to center field, Parr on the run, can't get it, he gets by him, all the way to the wall, bounces more towards center, Marte turns second, he heads for third, Tony Parachica is racing into the plate, here comes the throw, it's high, he is safe!
D-backs BP show.
Welcome to our weekly roundtable where we discuss what's going on with the Diamondbacks and the Major League Baseball season while we sit through the quarantine from COVID-19. Our producer engineer, who produces more than he engineers currently, is Leo Gilmartin. Our technical director, who does all of the technical directing, is Luke Robbins. The television voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks, the great Steve Berthume. I'm merely Mike Farron. And guys, we got a couple more stories. It seems like every Monday or Tuesday, right, we get a little bit more information when it comes to what could possibly happen for the 2020 season. I think in the last, really in the last week to 10 days, the tenor has turned from we're hoping to have a season to we're going to play. And it really seems like that there is a greater deal of optimism than even there was last Tuesday, Bert, that we're going to get some semblance of a 2020 season.
And, Mike, we've said throughout, as long as we've done these types of shows here, I think this is our fourth one.
Who's
that
counting,
you can't
though?
Get. It seems like just one big show. You can't get too worked up when a different plan or idea gets put forth because, as you just said, the tone and tenor of our nation and the health crisis and where we are in managing it seems to change week to week. And what a week or 2 weeks ago was seemingly impossible now seems possible. And you would sense that as mayors and governors maybe become increasingly open to the idea of easing restrictions, that this is a very real possibility.
I think the biggest thing that we can take from a couple of articles this week, this from Jeff Passan of ESPN yesterday, from Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic today, and then from Bob Nightingale, the Valley Zone, from USA Today, is that what Major League Baseball seems to be focused on is a plan that could start small and then expand over the course of the season. And this is, I should say, an idea that does this. And I think that speaks to what Bert's talking about, Leo, and that there still seem to be a lot of moving parts, but the ideas are getting more creative. And I think the hope is that everybody could get back to at some point playing in their home city over the course of the season. And then, you know, we'll see what happens when it comes to fans. But certainly it seems like there are more plans that seem viable as a result of some of the things that we've learned over the last week, 2 weeks. It changes weekly for us.
Yeah, and it feels like they're taking more shape. They're getting a little more concrete. They're getting a little more teeth to them, if you will. And the good news to me in reading these articles is more and more it looks like they're trying to get this to where it works in big league ballparks. Mm-hmm. So the whole Arizona as a baseball village type thing is more of a long shot now than anything else. So big league ballparks are coming into play. More cities are coming into play. And like I said, I think these plans are getting a little more concrete than just theoretical.
Well, Leo, I think, as Mike mentioned in the article that Bob Nightingale had today for USA Today, we saw our most concrete and seemingly doable plan to date with the idea that you would divide Major League Baseball up geographically into three 10-team divisions, West, Central, and East. Everybody plays in their own ballparks. You play only within your division, so that really limits the travel. It controls the travel, in a sense. You throw out the American and National League. You embrace the geography. It's the DH for everybody. And you hope to get 100 to 110 games in. And at least as we sit here on April 28th, this idea seems feasible, Mike, don't you think?
Yeah, no, I think so, too. And I think there are a couple things at play here with at least the idea of starting it in three states, which I think, I don't remember if that came out after we discussed last week, but the three-state plan, R.J. Anderson from CBS Sports had it at first.
We had that last week.
We had it last week. Where Arizona, Texas, and Florida would have games. There are advantages for that for media. in terms of both television and radio, in terms of broadcasting games in prime time in markets. And that would be advantageous. It would reduce the number of people in one market. If there were a worst case scenario where a number of people got sick, that it would certainly be less of an issue for the local medical teams to be able to deal with that. So those are all things that are possible. The idea that Bob floats in this article about the way the divisions would shake out seems more speculative to me than it does concrete. He basically just aligned it with the East, Central, and Western divisions all being the three things. I find it hard to believe that just on paper that the Texas teams would be playing in Arizona as opposed to in Texas if that state were hosting games. But we could certainly see some changes along the way, and the idea of reducing travel certainly makes things a little bit easier. Remember, we're not talking about commercial flights. We're talking about charter flights, charter buses. Everybody would be together in the same group. The feeling when the Arizona idea came out was that if you were in some sort of bubble where the only people around you were the people that you were involved in the sport and you didn't go outside of that, the risk for infection would be fairly low. This obviously expands the risk a little bit because you're moving around to different municipalities, but you would also only be traveling with those people that you are working with closely. And so, again, it's probably a relatively low risk for infection, which is one of the keys. The other thing that Bob mentions, and you want to get in here, Leo, but the one thing that Bob mentions in there, too, is public testing. And that's something that we're continuing to see ramp up. Not sure if you guys caught this story from this weekend, but they are hoping to do over the next three weekends in the state of Arizona between 30 and 60,000 COVID tests at various pharmacies across the state. They're really trying to ramp up the testing. Arizona's been one of the best at reporting their data, but they've been a little bit behind on the testing, and they really seem to be putting on a push now. If public testing is available, it's going to make things a lot easier for everyone.
Well, that has to happen. There has to be widespread public testing. Or availability, I should say, more mm-hmm. so than just actual testing, because that's one of the things. We can't have baseball taking away tests out from the general public. That has to be something that is society first. General public gets those tests first, and then we find a way to make sure we have plenty. And there's going to be a lot of testing. And I always thought, going back just a step on the three and looking at Bob's article and the three state, mm-hmm. And I know, Mike, you said this might start smaller and expand. I kind of thought the three division, the way it was laid out, was more if we're playing in every big league ballpark, not just the three states.
Yeah, I mean, Bob's article says everybody's playing in their own ballparks without fans. This is
at
not
some point,
the bubble where...
He said it's unclear as to whether or not in this it would open in those states, but you would think that that's likely, and I think anything that would have that three-state component, it wouldn't make sense to move people around mid-season, right? So if you were going to run the three-state idea as part of this, you would have to have that structure to it.
You know what's interesting to me, guys, is that when we do get past this as a nation, that it's going to be interesting to see how this reshapes baseball moving forward, whatever we come up with here this year. The idea of geographic divisions, the idea of a universal DH, I think we're going to come out on the end of this with something, as people are going to go, you know what? I kind of like that, and I kind of like the way that worked. Let's do that from now on.
Well, thanks for
I didn't see your hand waving in the little Zoom window,
no,
Leo.
Actually, it laid out perfectly.
I can't get past your beard. Your beard is blocking your Zoom camera.
This is radio.
Blurs in together. But
I thought we were on the TV side.
But no, I was going to ask you guys. I thought it might be getting a little bit ahead, but Bert, you went ahead. Out of all these little things that they've talked about, the universal DH, the realignment, temporary realignment, the revamped postseason, ending games, not necessarily in ties, even though that was floated, but shortening extra inning games, or all these different are there anything, any of these that excite you? Are they all, are you repulsed by them, all of them?
Well,
because I know you guys are kind of, baseball purists, which I am as well.
I was a baseball purist until I started doing 17 and 19 inning games. Something has to be done about that because it's just attrition baseball and it's an injury risk for the players and it's not, frankly, very good baseball. So I would be very much in favor of figuring something out to avoid these 7-hour 19 inning games. Now, Mike, you're the perfect guy to ask this, because I thought that the general consensus seemed to be, or the general thinking was, that down the road when baseball does expand to 32 teams, you have your balanced schedule, they would realign the divisions mm-hmm. geographically that way. This seems to be a step in that direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be curious. This certainly sounds like, at least in the way Bob wrote it, and again, he is speculating in the article. He said one idea of the way it could work would right. be, you know, keeping the Centrals together, the Wests together, the East together. I do think that's, I mean, it's likely to happen for, or I don't want to say necessarily likely, but I do think it's entirely feasible this year if we're trying to get off the ground as quickly as possible. That would be likely. I do think that there is a greater push to want to regionalize the matchups. The problem that you run into is it depends on how you want to balance the schedule. You know, we run with an unbalanced schedule as it is, and yet we have teams from multiple divisions fighting for wild card berths. If you're going to end up in some sort of 32-team league down the road, then you might end up with, the top two teams in each division, or first half, second half winners, who knows how they would want to structure it, would end up making the postseason, and that does create a little bit better balance in it, in making the divisions matter. But this is still far down the road. The commissioner, at least till now, has said that expansion only happens once Tampa Bay and Oakland get their stadium situations figured out. But you wonder if the desire for money down the line may help to hasten and speed the idea of expansion along.
It's amazing how the economics can speed up the process, both in this and in realignment down the road.
Which is also still going to be a major stumbling block going forward this season as well. The economics.
Yes.
You know, for me, I keep going back to 1981. I know I'm a lot older than you two guys are, but I remember the summer of 81 when I was a youngster and there was no baseball for 2 months. It still felt like, at the end of the year, like a representative season where every team played about 110 games that year. They had a good postseason. It was entertaining. And it felt like, okay, they salvaged something there. For me, that's the comp here. If we can pull off a 1981 here in 2020, I think that would be a very, very big win for baseball.
Well, we know for a fact this season is going to be different. It's going to be unique. It's going to be unlike anything else we've ever experienced. So maybe it's a good time to try a couple things, to some of it out of necessity. Some of it out of just let's see what it looks like, because it's going to be a unique season. You know, if we can get it going, let's try and have as much fun with it as we can. And yeah, I'm looking forward to getting reunited with you guys in the same room.
I know you are.
Well, I have that near the bottom of my list, frankly. But I think you social do have to throw out the
will keep us in different rooms, Leo.
You do have to throw out the idea of normal, and I think everyone's going to have to get over that pretty quickly here, no matter what plan or idea they do eventually settle on.
The good news is there is nothing normal about the three of us. Here's what comes up still on this program. Cubs Greatest. We'll look back at one of the great games in Diamondbacks history through the eyes of Greg Schulte. We'll talk about Randy Johnson's perfect game. That game was actually streaming today on the Diamondbacks website on dbacks.com, as they are doing some classics during the course of the week, and it was a no-hitter and perfect game day on the streaming feed. So we'll talk to the Gubna about Randy's perfect game. And up next, we'll visit with the new pitching coach of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Matt Hergis, joins us on the D-backs BP Show.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. This is the Diamondbacks BP Show, Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Diamondbacks pitching coach Matt Hergis scheduled to join us in a couple of moments. We'll visit with the D-backs new pitching coach a little bit about how he's keeping in touch with players and what's going on in this. Well, you got to get to know all the new guys, right? You got to get to know everybody. You got to get to know, maybe with the exception of Madison Bumgarner, who we knew in San Francisco last year, but all of a sudden, you're thrust into a situation where you're spending most of your time talking to them via Zoom as opposed to face-to-face.
Well, if anybody can pull it off, it's Matt Hergis. He is an incredibly gregarious guy, very outgoing, very personable, a terrific, smart, articulate guy, fun to talk to. And he was just rolling with enthusiasm about this new job when we spent some time with him earlier this spring. So it was a great hire. He's going to fit in really well. And it'll be exciting to have him on the show.
I haven't got a chance to visit with him yet. Yeah. He was a brief former Diamondback, very brief Diamondback.
And here's an interesting nugget for you, Leo. he actually was a pitcher and played for Torrey Lovello when Torrey was managing the Indians AAA team in Columbus.
Well, that's one heck of a nugget right there.
And now he's Torrey's pitching coach. Kind of cool.
Bert's been saving that nugget for
I have.
A while. He's been waiting for the right moment. You know, it's all the prep
chat
that he does.
Hey, I know. I've already done my 2021 NFL mock draft, if you want to get into that.
We have a little time. Who do you have the Cardinals taking?
I think they will draft for need.
By the way, speaking of drafts, there were a couple other pieces of news that I wanted to hit on. The Major League Baseball draft, which there was some talk that it might get pushed back, does appear like it is going to go on as scheduled on June 10th. So that certainly is good news. There's still no word as to whether or not it'll be more than five rounds, but the latest today was that that draft is going to happen at the time that it was scheduled, which is great. So now we can all ramp up. Bert, you can work on your 2020 Major League Baseball mock draft. That would be really nice.
Now, I know drafted- you have one.
I've drafted Cliff Kingsbury's decorator.
Well, we should mention that there
draft
is
a realtor.
There is a pretty significant local tie here with the Major League Baseball draft because the first overall pick is projected to be Spencer Torkelson, the first baseman designated hitter from Arizona State. So, Keela Williams, a shortstop, is likely to be a first day pick as well, somewhere in the top 40 or 50 picks as well. So,
he was hanging out. Torkelson was at camp. I ran into him in the hallway a few weeks ago, actually. He was down there doing some hitting. So that's exciting for ASU fans. I mean, you got to think it's a massive bummer. I mean, at least the basketball players got their regular season in before everything got wiped out in their conference tournaments and obviously the March Madness and the whole thing. But the college baseball players had just gotten underway and then everything was shut down. So they really, really had a tough time.
It's a go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say it's a really interesting draft scenario now because to Bert's point, a lot of the northern schools, the high school players didn't get a chance to play. They weren't into conference play in the biggest conferences yet, and so teams are having to do a lot of extra video work. Scouts are poring over video and information and trying to find ways to make good evaluations. The good news is that it's not like this is the first time anybody has seen these players. You know, they have been followed for well over a year, and in some cases, if they were fairly famous in high school and are now famous in college, 4 or 5, maybe 6 years, the teams have had looks at them. So it doesn't. While on the surface, it seems like, oh my gosh, how are you going to draft based on 12 games? You really have a lot more history with these players. And that will certainly benefit teams every team that I've talked to says they feel like they're ready for it. So it should be kind of fun to see how it changes, and there might be some more diversity with their boards, Leo.
I'll jump in here, Leo.
You jump
in.
I wanted
to say something, Leo.
No, I'm trying to track down Mr. Hurgis. My
I was going to ask, what about
the
high
school? Oh, you're producing.
Well, let's not get carried away.
Well, no, right now I'm not producing.
What about the high school kids, Mike? Especially as you mentioned in the Northeast. I mean, those kids always are up against it geographically anyway, but the high school kids, I mean, how do you scout those? The last time anyone will have seen these kids play was when they were juniors.
Yeah, most of those players, though, they saw a fair amount. The showcase circuit is pretty robust. Last year, Perfect Game National Tournament was actually at Chase Field here. Being able to see those guys for as long as most of those players were seen, it probably doesn't have a significant impact. The people that will hurt more are players more like a good example of it is Blake Walston, who the Diamondbacks took in the first round last year. Walston wasn't necessarily at the highest guy on radars. He wasn't big on the travel circuit as a high school player, so he hadn't been seen a ton. But he started to get some helium, right? Like there was those draft words, right? The Hubie Browns, the unlimited helium. And so people went in to see him more as the year went on, and all of a sudden he found his way into the first round. Those players are the ones that are going to suffer more than the guys who have been fairly famous high school players. So players that are in Illinois, there's one really good high school player in Illinois. There's one in a couple in Pennsylvania. There's one in Tennessee. There's one in Oregon. Those guys are probably going to end up being okay. By the same token, in the South, a lot of those high school players got seen, and there is a player here in Phoenix, Carson Tucker, who is the brother of Cole Tucker, the Pirate shortstop, who probably will move up draft boards because a lot of evaluators got to see him early in the year.
Who has the top three picks, Mike?
The Detroit Tigers are number one. The Baltimore Orioles, I believe, are number two. And you put me on the spot here, so I can't.
Well, exactly. Turnabout's fair play.
That's poor Leo. That's poor.
I mean, Leo, you were trying to jump in. I wasn't trying to give you that.
Leo, your idea is to support the talent.
It doesn't feel too good, does it, Mike?
Oh, hey, I got goodness. The first one right.
Hey,
Detroit,
well, if you're
Baltimore,
looking,
Miami are your top.
There you go. If you're looking for baseball to watch, this seems like a good time, Leo. As I guess I'll just produce the show.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
To jump in on. Don't forget Fox Sports Arizona's Thursday Throwback Classic. Fox Sports Arizona Thursday Throwback Classic. This coming Thursday, Game 3 of the 2011 National League Division Series. That's the game that'll be on Fox Sports Arizona. So please check that out Thursday. You can also participate in the 50-50 raffle. Now, the 50-50 has become a great story, guys.
Oh, absolutely.
You can play all week long, and then the winning number is announced
like
during the Throwback Thursday game on Fox Sports Arizona. So we've had two winners so far. More than $20,000 has been donated to the community thanks to our fans and matched, by the way, by the Arizona Diamondbacks Foundation. But our two winners so far in the 50-50, one was a healthcare worker and the other was a firefighter. So outstanding work by everybody at the Diamondbacks and Fox Sports Arizona for getting the 50-50 going again. And it has a new number coming up this Thursday.
That is very good. And, in fact, I just got on and purchased my ticket a couple of minutes ago. So that's
you do the 80 for 20? That's mine. I always do the 80 for 20.
Yeah, I'm an 80 for 20 guy. And then
how's that working for you
guys? I buy for, you know, one of these days, Leo, it's going to pay off.
That's right.
All of our numbers are sure to come up at some point.
But we don't play to win. We play to support.
Yes.
Isn't that what it is?
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
You've always been a tremendous athletic supporter, Leo.
I have been told. Not much. I've never been told I'm a great producer. I've been told I'm a great athletic supporter.
Let's not get crazy. Seriously, with that beard, it looks like you're Leo DiCaprio in The Revenant. You were just attacked by a bear.
I thought I'd look more like the bear, but I appreciate the...
You may be right there.
You don't.
Leo or the bear advantage push. Don't forget the blood drive,
goodness.
Guys. D-backs Red Cross blood drive.
To the script here at some point.
I got to get this stuff in.
No, this is good stuff. We really should be talking about
this. This is just slightly better than Leo's beard on radio. Red Cross Blood Drive started today, runs through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the ballpark. J.J. Putz, Willie Bloomquist are donating. They were down there today.
Did you see the pictures of them sporting their alma mater masks, too? J.J. wearing a Michigan mask and Willie wearing an... had Sparky all over his face.
Willie is a big Sun Devil guy. He is a big Sun Devil guy. He's on the train.
No idea.
Get on the train. Now, the thing about the Red Cross blood drive is you had to sign up in advance so everybody can, with the coronavirus restrictions and social distancing requirements, those need to be maintained. Obviously, that's priority one. So you had to sign up at redcrossblood.org, redcrossblood.org, keyword one team. All one word, one team. And you can make an appointment to donate blood through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Chase Field. And our thanks to the American Red Cross and our friends at Budweiser who are doing drives like this at stadiums all over the country because more than 14,000 blood drives all over the U.S. have been canceled. So they are down about 400,000 donations. And so this is really, really necessary and needed. So if you can go to redcrossblood.org and figure out a way to make an appointment, go down there to the ballpark, maybe see J.J. Putz or Willie Bloomquist and donate some blood, that would be very, very welcome.
Yeah, I think the cool part is that everything is by appointment only, so it's not like you're going to be in a huge crowd of people. So go ahead, get signed up, and get your chance to get down there. One more just worth mentioning, Stephen Vogt, who just this evening with the governor, hosted a program with a bunch of little leaguers from around the state, a virtual interaction with some fans. Bert, you and I both got the chance to do that. I did one last night with Chef Stephen Tilder, where he made bacon wrapped hot dogs with a little corn, like a
now,
corn.
Did you
relish.
Throw in some of
was
your?
It a,
did
was
you
it
throw
a
in some of your? Did you throw in some of your tips?
I left it to the experts
as well?
There, Leo. I just asked him to drop some off at the house so that I could eat them.
But that's
delicious.
That's right in your wheelhouse.
It is. It was.
For a guy that constantly tweets pictures of his food.
There's been great experiences because you did that with Chef Tiller. I know, Bert, you did one with season ticket holders as well.
It was a better experience for Bert than it was for Tori. In that
we had a lot of fun.
Tori
and I did about a half-hour discussion Friday afternoon with season ticket holders. We had a lot of people watch us online and type in questions, and I relayed them to Tori, and we had some fun. So that was a lot of fun, and our thanks again to Tori for participating in that. So we'll have more virtual interactions as we muddle on through here.
Yeah, Stephen Vogt actually, baseball. And Stephen Vogt had he's very busy. He did a virtual hospital visit as well, correct?
Yeah, he's about to.
Banner Health.
Banner Health.
That's
what he's about to.
Was that he's doing that? So. He loves working with kids, and I had a chance to talk to Stephen the other day in my other gig, and we were talking a little bit about how much he said I like to approach a game every day like I'm a little leaguer. So being able to give back to kids is something really important for him. He was an education major in college, and his wife is a coach, and so being able to be a part of that is really important to him. So it's one of those guys that you're going to find the more that we get to see the Diamondbacks and listen to the Diamondbacks play this year, you're going to really, really love the way Stephen Vogt connects here in the Valley. So more great work from him for sure. We're going to have one of Gubb's greatest coming up next, Randy Johnson's perfect game. Greg will share his memories and some highlights of that next on the D-backs BP show. Time for another one of Gubb's greatest, and we look back to one of the most spectacular individual performances in Diamondbacks history, May 18th, 2004, Randy Johnson's perfect game at Turner Field in Atlanta. Greg, I want to go back to the start of the 2004 season, because 2004, from a one-loss standpoint, was the roughest year in Diamondbacks history. You had to know coming into the season that things weren't shaping up to be great.
Yeah, it didn't really start out that way, but boy, it got bad quick. That's when, in fact, it got to the baby backs. You had a lot of players that ended up playing in the major leagues for the Diamondbacks and never got a chance to play big league baseball again. And if I say Josh Kroger, do you know that name? Or Doug DeVore? I mean, I could go on and on. Yeah, okay. But it was a ball club. You know, it signaled the end of Bob Brenly's managerial career. Steve Finley got traded to the Dodgers. A lot of different things happened, but there was one constant from day one of that season, and that was Randy Johnson.
You know, we were talking before we started recording, and Randy had an incredible year. That team won 51 games, but he, and while his record was barely over 500, he more than kept his team in all of his starts.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. If you put his number, we talked about this. Roger Clemens won the Cy Young that year. What'd you say? Went 18-4 with a 2.9 ERA. Mm-hmm. He was pitching with Houston, but Randy, what Randy did for a ball club that won 51, he won 16. Ended up losing 10. The only reason he lost 10 ball games because they couldn't get him any runs. But every night he went out there, you thought, and I've thought this Randy's entire career with the Diamondbacks, something special might happen. And on this particular night in Atlanta at Turner Field, something special did happen.
When did you first get the sense that it might be one of those Randy Johnson?
First inning.
Really?
To be honest with you, first inning. I mean, number one, their lineup that night was Jesse Garcia, Julio Franco, who might have been 50 or 51 years old at that time, Chipper Jones, Andrew Jones, Johnny Estrada, J.D. Drew, Mark DeRosa, Nick Green, and then Mike Hampton. Not a great lineup, but, I mean, you talk about the Joneses in there and J.D. Drew, DeRosa. But Randy in that first inning carved up Franco and Chipper Jones easily.
Johnson into the line in the 0-2, and Franco strikes out swinging. Here's a 2-2 pitch to Chipper Jones, and he struck him out swinging. Johnson strikes out two in the inning, and the Braves are down in order, 1-2-3.
And he was off and right. It seemed like any pitch that Randy wanted to throw where Robbie Hammock put up the glove, Randy would hit the mitt. And he did that from the first inning all the way through the ninth inning.
And it was a pretty good pitcher's duel throughout. Mike Hampton, who was on top of his game that night too.
How about this? You had two pitchers who went nine innings. Hampton went nine innings, allowed two runs, struck out five, walked three. Randy did his thing. The game only took 2 hours and 13 minutes. That's unheard of in this day and age. But, it was and so typical, Mike. And it seemed like any time Randy pitched, whoever was pitching against him had a career night or just was on top of his game. And Mike Hampton was on top of his game that particular night.
So you said from the first inning you could tell that something was special. Mm-hmm. At what point did the nerves start to settle in? And I don't want to say necessarily nerves, but, you get that anxious butterfly feeling in your stomach when something really cool is happening.
Well, I think the only tough play of the night was one turned in by Alex Cintron, who was playing short. And I can't remember if it was Nick Green. It might have been Mike Hampton who hit it either in the third or the sixth inning. I can't remember which play it was. But Cintron only had two plays all night, but he had to come in on a chopper field and kind of throw on the run. That was really the only difficult play.
Last fastball at 97 miles per hour from the big unit.
He's fun to watch when he's like this. It's a great seat we got tonight, Governor.
Here's a 1-2 pitch to Hampton and a ground ball. Cintron's going to have to be quick on the run. He throws, and he got him at first on a nice play. Heck of a play by Cintron. And Johnson throws out the glove to acknowledge the play. The Braves down in order for the sixth consecutive inning.
Randy had 1-3-2 count the entire night, and that was to Johnny Estrada in the second inning. He ended up striking him out on a 3-2 pitch. But that was the only 3-2 count he had all night. I'll be honest with you, and I'm not sounding cocky on this, I didn't think they'd get a hit. I really didn't. I didn't think they'd get a base runner. He was so in command. I've never seen a better pitch ball game from a pitcher hitting a catcher's mitt than what Randy had on that particular night on May 18th.
And that's incredible when you think of the great performances you saw him and Schilling and Brandon Webb and all of these great pitchers in Diamondbacks history that have put together, not to mention growing up in the Midwest and seeing, you know, Bob Gibson and watching the great Cardinals teams of that. To think that that was happening in front of you had to be incredible.
Yeah, and the other thing was he was pushing on 4,000 strikeouts. He ended up striking out 13 of that particular night, and that got him well into the 3,900, I think 3,950 he ended up with at the end of that night as he was approaching 4,000. So here's a guy who, again, didn't get his career started really going until, what was he, 27 years old with Seattle, where he really started to figure things out. And now at the end of his career, was pitching in a ball club that would win only 51 ball games while losing 111. And he had one of the greatest perfect games you'll ever see.
Thinking back to your history with Randy, and obviously, you know, the World Series is part of it, you know, the Cy Young Awards, the perfect game, but you saw him in college too. Did you at any point, whether it's in that game or some other time, think about how much you were able to see the evolution of Randy Johnson, the pitcher?
I saw Randy pitch against Arizona State at Packard Stadium there on the ASU campus, and he threw about three or four of them back to the screen on the fly. Here was a
Nuke
big
LaLouche.
Guy. Yeah, exactly. I mean, here was a guy 6'9", 6'10", that he was just ramping up and throwing the ball, not really having any idea where it was going. And then, you know, to go to Montreal, then move on to Seattle, and then to Houston briefly, where Randy will tell you he pitched the best baseball he's ever pitched in his career. That, you know, those 10 or 11 ball games he pitched with the Astros at the end of the, what was it, the 98 season. Mm-hmm. He joined the Diamondbacks in 1999 after becoming a free agent. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I saw Randy pitch a lot of ball games over the course of time, starting in the six-pack when he had his days at USC and then moving on to the major leagues. And fortunately, became a member of the Diamondbacks, where he won four consecutive Cy Young Awards.
You know, I was watching this game in the newsroom at WGN Radio when it happened. So in May of 2004, I was producing in their studios. And so we're watching this game unfold. And I remember thinking, well, these guys don't have much of a chance. Now, obviously, you were locked in from the beginning. When Eddie Perez, the old backup catcher, finally comes to the plate with two outs in the ninth, what was it like? What was your reaction to what you were seeing unfold? Because by this point, you've called a World Series, you've called a couple of no-hitters, you've called all of these great moments, but here it is, one of the most iconic moments in baseball happening to one of its greatest pitchers.
Just didn't want something fluky to happen. You know, a strikeout wild pitch, you know, maybe a little broken bat base hit. And he carved up Eddie Perez rather fast, as I recall. And then, you know, the reaction of Randy when Robbie Hammock was running out there, it was exciting, to say the least. It was just, you know, one of those things where you just you wanted it to happen. It did happen. And lo and behold, Randy had struck out 13 and had been perfect.
Eddie Perez at the plate, right-handed hitter, the pinch hitter for Bobby Cox. Johnson looks in. He's got his side. The big unit ready. And the 2-2 pitch. He struck him out. Perfection, Randy Johnson. A perfect game.
on this Tuesday night, May 18th, and his teammates rush onto the field to mob the big unit. And listen to these fans here in Atlanta. And Randy Johnson waves to the crowd. At the age of 40, Randy Johnson becomes only the 16th pitcher to pitch a perfect game in Major League history.
I was happy for him. I was happy for the ball club. And I think the great thing was the reaction of the Atlanta fans. They got into it about the seventh. They just had a feeling themselves. You know, Randy had struck out 10 through 7, and they knew what they were watching. Nobody had reached base yet. And there was a big crowd that night. I don't know if it was a fireworks night or what, but I think they had over 30,000 at Turner Field that particular night. And they were upstanding with every out he would record. And it sounded like it was a Diamondback home game, to be honest with you, Mike.
I'll tell you what's incredible. The league average around that time for swinging strikes was around 7 or 8%. Randy was always well above that. Night, of the 87 strikes he threw, 26 of them were swinging. I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah. Well, when he ended up throwing 117 pitches. Yeah, it's a bunch, but I mean Not like the other no hitter I called in Tampa for Edwin Jackson. What did he throw? 149.
Yeah, yeah.
He was almost out of the ballgame in the third inning. This was perfection from Randy Johnson, to say the least.
Randy Johnson's perfect game. Another one of Gubb's greatest here on the D-backs BP Show.
D-backs BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Final moments of our program today. I should mention, with Gubb's greatest there, talking about the Randy perfect game, that game was streaming today on dbacks.com, and there'll be other great D-backs memories streaming on the website. We got a bunch of games that are going on all over the place, not just the ones on television with Fox Sports Arizona, although Thursday night was a game 3 of the 2011 division series is running. So,
by the way, we're only showing the ones we win.
There is a programming note to pass along on the TV side from Fox Sports Arizona. Now, I did one of these with Jody Jackson a couple of weeks ago. It's called Checking In. I'm surprised they haven't called Leo, frankly. But they,
what happens when you show Leo on TV. The ratings go up so much they don't want to make you feel inferior.
We're in negotiations.
Ratings. What's with all the B-roll? But Jody checks in with Tori, and that's coming up on Fox Sports Arizona Thursday, 6 and 9:30. So Tori takes the computer in his hand. He walks around. He shows you his house, his woodworking projects, and they chat about that. So that's coming up on Fox Arizona Thursday at 6 and 9:30, checking in with Jody Jackson and Tori Lavello.
There you go. That's
another good nugget.
Leo, you asked a question earlier that Bert expertly sidestepped.
Look, answered it.
I want to see. Maybe it's better the second time around. So I'll ask the question again, and maybe I'll speak a little slower this time. Maybe it'll be a little clearer.
This is usually what he says to get a second date with somebody, by the way. You know, it's better the second time around.
I can't speak slow enough to make them understand. the question I have with all the different things we're talking about in different scenarios and with the unique season, they're talking about different things like the realignment, which we touched about, universal DH, doing something with extra innings, modified postseason. Is there anything that excites you guys, that interests you, that has been discussed, or maybe you wouldn't mind seeing try? I know you guys are both kind of purists, but is there anything out there that seems interesting and worth trying?
Bert kind of answered it before in talking about the regional realignment, and I think that that's something that really intrigues me. I mean, I like the idea of creating better regional rivalries. I realize that blows up the leagues and divisions to some degree, but I don't know that we necessarily have to treat those as sacred cows anymore. I mean, we're all, with the exception of the designated hitter, playing under the same rules, and as much as I'm an NL forever guy, I really think that at some point that we're going to have the universal GH. It's going to happen, and we're just kind of resigned to the fact that it's going
and most likely here too.
Supposed to be a foregone conclusion in the next CBA
be a universal two DH? Collective bargaining agreement. So I don't know if it necessarily is, but we'll see. I mean, the next collective bargaining agreement is set to be negotiated, probably just as soon as they start getting back to playing, because the current one expires at the end of the 2021 season. But that's entirely a possibility. I like that idea. I mean, I like the idea. The other one that I like, and maybe this is because, I've spent a lot of time watching minor league baseball or being at minor league baseball games, the 2 7-inning doubleheaders is a really humane way to do doubleheaders.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ideas that's been floated in an effort to try and get extra games in. And I mean, every level except for the major leagues does 2 7s. They do it in the minors. They do it in college. They do it in high school. They might do a little bit shorter than that. But the 2 7s is something that I think is certainly outside the traditional realm, but one that I really find interesting.
Now, do you change the rules for what qualifies as a win and all that goes along with it?
Yeah, if it's no longer a 9-inning game anymore,
people still keep track of them.
Yes, they do.
They don't, I believe, in the minor leagues. I think it's still 5 innings to get that.
Okay. You know, I like your idea, Mike, of not being married to everything the way we've always done it. And the more I look at a potential, and emphasizing the word potential, structure of 3 10-team divisions, why have leagues? Get rid of the leagues. Have three.
Anarchy.
The more I think about it, it's craziness. I know, but
hey,
so what? Why are we married
crap
to this model where they have to have at least, you know, two leagues? Why do we need – if you're going to have a universal DH – and if we all agree that's a foregone conclusion, that seems to be the direction in which we're headed, then why do you need leagues? Have 3 10-team divisions and then expand your playoffs and come up with a playoff format that fits that. But I don't hate that idea, as radical as it seems right now. It doesn't seem that crazy.
I'm not the biggest fan of expanding the playoffs much further.
I agree there. I think it's really good the way it is.
I also resisted the second wild card, and a lot of it is because I think that the further you get away from – first of all, I think baseball is different than other sports in that the regular season is so much different than the postseason. They're really two completely different games. You know, in the postseason, it's not a battle of attrition. It's not, you know, 162 games. You're able to shorten up your roster and your team, and I think that makes a significant impact that it isn't always the best team that ends up winning the postseason. Personally, I feel that way because I think luck plays a disproportionate factor. And so the more teams you add, the more it takes away from the regular season. I'm that goofball that likes the regular season grind the most. And so I really am not in favor of that, although I realize that that's where the extra dollars are to be able to generate revenue for radio and on the TV side.
But if there's – thank you for getting that in at the end. You know, if there's anything that underscores the joy of watching the 162-game grind every day, it's this pandemic where suddenly we're without it, and there's this giant void. Now, hopefully that makes everybody appreciate exactly what you said even more. You know, that's the beauty of baseball. It's a narrative. It's a story. It's for 6 months. It's just about every day. And the last thing you want to be is the NBA. Or even the NHL, where almost everybody makes the playoff. I mean, what's less relevant than a regular NBA season?
Mm-hmm.
You don't want that. Absolutely don't want that. And I think as more you expand the playoffs, and I get there's a lot of money there at the end if you want it, but boy, you really do water things down for 6 months.
Does this program do a decent job of replicating the grind of 162 games for you, Bert? Or
how much was this worth? Was this about a 15-gamer right here this hour?
Leo,
this is no off
day. Every day with you,
game,
Leo, is a joy.
After a night game followed by a travel day plus three
every
or four
day
nights.
With Leo is a joy and a privilege.
Leo, I'll throw the question back at you. What do you think? What are you most intrigued about other than, maybe ties after the 11th inning so you can get out of there faster?
Well, I don't want the ties, but I do like the idea of adjusting the extra innings. I think there's a lot of good reasons to do that. I do not want the tie. I don't like that.
So you're okay with the starting runners at first and second, like they have in international competition?
Yep. I think that's really the only logical thing. You can't do, you know, a home run derby or something like that. I don't think
it's kind of a creative idea that Justin Turner had. I liked that. I want to see it actually implemented. I don't like the shootout in hockey either. But
right.
I
don't mind it in soccer because if it's an international tournament and it's the only way you can decide it without playing 6 hours, that's fine. But, boy, you know, I hated the thought of it, and then I watched the World Baseball Classic, and at the end I went, you know what? That actually kind of worked. It made it more exciting. You just can't have these 7-hour games. You're playing 15, 19 innings. It's attrition baseball. It's dangerous. It's bad baseball.
Agreed.
I think that's a real issue. I really do think that has to be addressed.
With the exception of your first year with the Diamondbacks, Bert, it really is a rarity when those games go longer than 12 innings. It doesn't impact that many over the course of the game. It's more yelling and screaming about what ends up being, about 0.5% of games, something like that?
And there's 200 people in the stands, and it's 4 in the morning, and everybody says, wow, this is great. And then everybody tries to hit a home run for 6 innings, and you wind up playing 7 hours. I think it's an injury risk. It's a health issue. It's something that I think the players' union should push to address in the next CBA. It's dangerous for these guys to be out there that long.
That
it's just not
said,
good.
The last year's 19-inning game, one of my favorite baseball games I've ever attended.
Why?
I loved that game. That game had a lot of action. It was exciting. The Cardinals were still in the pennant race. The Diamondbacks ended up winning. Like it was a great game. I loved it. That was on Greg's list of his greatest games. That game was on the list. That was an entertaining game.
You mentioned my first year. 2013 was my first season here, and I think the number was 86 that we did.
Who's counting?
We played 86 extra innings in total that season.
Did we set some records that year, didn't we?
And they were all on getaway days. And I remember the one road trip, we had a 15-inning game in Pittsburgh and then the 7-hour game in Philadelphia the following week. That was a lot. That was a lot.
I am in favor of the pitch clocks. That's not coming, but that's the one thing that I would be most in favor of that's outside the
You see that making a difference?
Yeah, I've seen it make a difference. So, I mean, it's made a difference in time of game in the minor leagues and in the Arizona Fall League.
But don't you think the onus is – don't you think it has to be more about the hitter than the pitcher? Who's dawdling more, the pitcher or the hitter?
It doesn't matter. I mean, it's called a pitch clock because it's the time between pitches, but it gets the hitter in the box too. So,
But the assumption is that the pressure is on the pitcher.
Pitchers are always complaining that it's about them. It's not. But it's also not going to happen. So it doesn't – I mean, it seems like it's one of those things that has fallen by the wayside. But we've seen the ideal was at some point, the players will take control of this. They'll get it. They'll police themselves, and they haven't to this point. And if you watch a game, the biggest difference, I think, between the game now and the game in, like, the mid-'80s was – The pace, and it's just the amount of time between pitches and all that. I mean, the strikeouts and home runs, all that stuff, too, is different. The players look different, too. But
I've watched a lot of old games on YouTube. I do that anyway. It's really fun, just random games from the 70s and 80s. It's amazing how quickly those pitchers work. They get it, they throw it, bang, bang, bang. It's almost off-putting how quickly they go.
And here you blame the hitter.
No, I'm just saying, get in the box. Let's go. Come on, Leo, get in the box.
Get in the box.
What's in the box?
Apparently this program is. We will send it off to the Radio Hall of Fame now. Thanks so much for joining us this evening for the D-Bags BP Show. We will be back again next Tuesday at 6 for our technical director, Luke 10. Robbins, for Leo Gilmartin, for Steve Berthiaume. I'm Mike Farron saying so long and thanks for joining us. We will see you next Tuesday. Please stay safe.